And it says, I went to my hotel room and leisurely dressed for dinner. Squiggly writing. I suppose this is where the insanity comes. And here's what it is. As I crossed the threshold of my dining room, the thought came to me that it would be nice to have a couple cocktails and go back to the treatment center. That would be the truth. He didn't drink on the truth. He drank on the lie. And here was the lie. It would be nice to have a couple cocktails with dinner. That was all. Nothing more. So he has a drink, triggers the allergy, phenomenal craving. Listen what happens. I order a cocktail in my meal. Then I order another one. He's in it. Now he can't stop. After dinner, I decided to take a walk and return to the hotel. It struck me a highball would be fine before going to bed, so I stepped in the bar and had one. I remember having several more that night and playing the next morning. I had a shadowy recollection of being in the airplane bound for New York and finding a friendly taxi driver at the landing field instead of my wife. The driver escorted me about for several days. I know little where I went and what I said and did. Then came the hospital with the unbearable and mental suffering. We never drink on the truth. I'll give you an example. If tonight, on the way home, I stopped at a bar or the drive-thru and said, Mister, it's been 29 years, 7 months in those days since I had a drink. The last time I drank, I was homeless, familyless, clothesless. I was down 129 pounds. I was dying. I got a pocket full of money. I'd like to buy some of that tonight. That wouldn't happen. I would stop and buy a drink saying, after all this time and after what I know and what I've been through, it's going to be different next time. That would be plain insanity. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Okay, so now listen to what he says. It says, as soon as I regained the ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Squiggly writing, important. Not only had I been off guard, I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. Based on the lie, he made a decision to drink, made problem centers in mind. This time I thought of no consequences at all. And it says, I had commenced to drink as carelessly as the cocktails were ginger ale. I remember what my alcoholic friends have told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the obsession, losing lie, insanity, then time and place would come, I would drink. Again, they had said, though I did raise a defense, it would one day give away before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that happened, and more. What I learned about alcoholism did not occur to me at all. I knew from that moment I had an alcoholic mind, and that is somebody who suffers from the insanity to lose an illusion. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. Insanity. I've never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. Two of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous came to see me. They grinned, which I did not like so much. You can just see them, okay? Come on, y'all. Now listen to what it says. Chapter 7. He's going to say this again. Okay. They asked me if I thought myself alcoholic. Allergy, obsession, spiritual malady. Not somebody who drinks too much and get in trouble. That's not an alcoholic. We've established that, okay? If I was alcoholic and if I were really licked this time. I had to concede, not admit, concede to both propositions. Oh, that's right. Fully concede to their innermost selves. First step in recovery. So he did. Let's see what happens, okay? They pile on me heaps of evidence, the effect of the alcoholic mentality, insanity, such as I exhibited in Washington, was a hopeless condition. You can get to see here now where this dude is really taking step one at the level that needs to be done, okay? And it says, they cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen. This process snuffed out the last flicker conviction that I could do the job myself. So, they outlined the spiritual answer. Not religious, that is step two. They gave them one. Now they outlined the spiritual answer. And program of action, steps 3 through 12. Problem, solution, plan of action. Which 100 of them followed successfully. Though it had only been a nominal churchman, the proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow. But the program of action, not reading, not talking, not philosophy, not all that stuff, program of action. That's right, there is a chapter into action, okay? Though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. It meant I would have, not should, could, ought to, throw away several lifelong conceptions out the window. That was not easy. But the moment I made up my mind to go through the process, 12 steps, I had the curious feeling that the alcoholic condition was removed, as in fact it had proved to be. What alcoholic condition is he talking about? The mental obsession that condemns him to drink was relieved. I get it. Came to believe that a power greater self could restore us to sanity. One of the most important sentences of this book coming up. And by the way, he does this on page 13, again, and contrary to what we might hear, that acceptance is the answer to all our problems, not what it says in the first 164 pages. This is the second time he tells us exactly what the answer is, and it is this. Quite important was the discovery that spiritual principles, the 12 steps, would solve all of my problems. Not some of them, not most of them, not a lot of them, not quite a few, all of them. And guess what? On page 13 in Bill's story, he said the exact same thing. So guess what? Self's the problem. God's the answer. The 12 steps are the plan of action to get it. Problem, solution, plan of action. So he goes on to say, I have since brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfactory and I hope more useful than the life I had before. My old manner of life was by no means was a bad one, but I would not exchange its best moments for the worst now. I would not go back to it even if I could. Remember what we said when people say, I choose not to drink today. I cannot be powerless over something and say I have a choice. Remember what the choice is. It's the logical decision of two alternatives. An alcoholic of the hopeless variety placed beyond human aid. That is not a logical decision to drink. Therefore, I do not have a choice. I don't have a choice. That's what the choice is, logical decision. He goes on to say, Fred's story speaks for itself. We hope it strikes home to thousands like him. He had felt only the nip of the ringer. Most alcoholics have to be pretty badly mangled before they really commence to solve their problems, plural S, not just drinking. We're talking alcoholism. And we find out what they are. Selfish, self-centered, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. Those are 402 problems of alcoholism, I guarantee you. Okay, many doctors and psychiatrists agree with our conclusions. One of these men, staff member of world-renowned hospital, that happened to be a Percy Pollock, who was a psychiatrist at Bellevue Hospital. And by the way, Bellevue is still up and running, so if you want to get committed, go to New York City. They'll take you. Recently made this statement to some of us. He said, what you say about the general hopelessness of the average plight of the average alcoholic's plight, in my opinion, is correct. As to the two of you men whose stories I've heard, there is no doubt in my mind that you were 100% hopeless apart from divine help. As patient in this hospital, I would not have taken you. If I had been able to avoid it, people like you are too heartbreaking. Though not a religious person, I have profound respect for the spiritual approach in such cases as yours. For most cases, there is virtually no solution. Now, please keep it up into mind before we have this last paragraph and we're done. He's given us examples of this. Bill Wilson, Roland Hazard, thought self-knowledge would fix it. It did not. And just good measures, they thought Fred, the same thing. He got the same results on page 39. As we look for the obsession of the mind, what happens to all four of those guys in this chapter? Man of 30, Jim, Jay Walker, and Fred, all of those, plus the two we mentioned, make one point, the last paragraph on page 43, and listen what it says. He's going to great lengths to do that. And it says, once more, the alcoholic, He doesn't say the practicing alcoholic. He doesn't say the drinking alcoholic. He says the alcoholic. Whether you're drinking one day, 50 years, 60 years, it says the alcoholic. The alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being could provide such a defense. His defense must, not should, not could, not ought to, come from a higher power. So, if you are into numbers, he tells us on page 23, 24, 34, 35, 36, 37, 39, 41, and 43, I can't think my way of not drinking. So, he is absolutely convinced, me, I'll speak for myself, without that vital spiritual experience, and without the aid of a power greater than myself, the insanity will return. Not may, it will. I will believe the lie. I will act on it. I will drink, and I will die. So, in conclusion, you thought I was going to say one more real quick, didn't you? I got you. Okay. See? Yeah, okay. In conclusion, from now on, the rest of the book is going to tell us we can't heal a sick mind with a sick mind. We can't think our way out of this. The more we try to think our way out of it, the deeper we get. I got news for you. We cannot solve a problem with the same mind that created this. So now I get it. God could and would if he were sought. Okay, now. So the answer is, as may sound strange, the answer is in the answer, not in the problem. So in this chapter, he's convinced me without a shadow of a doubt what will happen to me if I don't have that vital spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. The insanity sooner or later, don't know when it's going to be, without the vital spiritual experience and finding that power, I will drink again. Since this chapter doesn't pull any punches. I think it was pretty direct. I think we get it. It clearly says, except for a rare case, his defense must come from a higher power. Now here's the challenge, and we'll go ahead and be done with this. If you were like myself, and I'll thank you for this drink, whoever brought this up, by the way. I love you, baby. Thank you for the drink. A lot of us are going to have problems. I'll speak for myself, which I do. I came from a certain nationality. I'll go ahead and say it. I was born a cradle Catholic. So, when I was confronted with this, get God or die, I was screwed. Because guess what? I wasn't good with Rome. I wasn't good with the Pope. I wasn't good with the Ten Commandments. I wasn't good with nothing. So here's where I was at. And this is my bad. This is how it came to me. And I remember it was Good Friday when I made a deliberate decision. I am D-U-N. I was talking about D-U-N with them, all of them, my parents and all, whatever. I remember. You know, I remember the exact day. It was a beautiful Good Friday, sunny or whatever. But here's how it came to me and why. My conception, my old ideas were twisted. Because I would be in this church and I would be told this is God's favorite and his one and only son. And here he was on a crucifix, nailed up there, blood coming out of whatever. And they told me he was the son of God, he was the favorite, he was all that. And I thought, oh shit, I don't stand a chance. Because I wasn't it, okay? They told me, this is what I heard, if you think about sinning, you might as well be sinning. And since that's all I was thinking about, guess what? I started doing it. And here's what I thought. Here's what I said. They told me if you did this, this, and this, you were going to hell. Well, guess what? I did that, that, and that, and I went to heaven. In other words, it felt so good, right? Come on, y'all. So I said to myself, they, talking about them, the teachers, my parents, the church, the Bible, all that good stuff, they have been lying to me all along. And I willingly and wantonly said, I'm going to clean it up, the heck with you. So, when I came in and got this, it wasn't a good spot for me to be where I was at. Thank God, and we'll close up. He wrote, And next week, next chapter, one of the greatest spiritual pieces of information. In drunk talk, he is able to take an agnostic, an atheist, whatever you want to call, label yourself or whatever. He will give us a simple, precise, exact, clear-cut procedure to where we can find our own conception, not understanding, of a power greater than ourselves. And the reason that's so important, because I can't go on with the rest of the program, I can't make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care and direction of God that I'm not good with. Thank God he put in next week's chapter. I mean, it is the turning point. You know, I know how it works. It says we stood at the turning point. I got news for you. For most of us alcoholics, until we got here, now that I'm convinced I got to have the spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, I'm scrambling now. How do I do that? Well, he's going to tell me next week, next chapter, to put myself in that position to be able to go on and make that decision. Once that decision is made, you turn it into action with steps four and so on and so forth. And I could not go on with the rest of the program until I knew why I had to have this vital spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. And next week, he's going to tell me how I can put myself in that position, how I can get a conception of this God that makes sense, that I'll be able to go on with the rest of it. Thank you for being here. How about if we close with the Lord's Prayer? Go to the quiet place first before we pray the Serenity Prayer from our heart versus saying the Serenity Prayer from our head. I'll speak for myself. I can give a lot of lip service and prayer. Be praying and be having one foot in the starting block, and I'll be out the door before I have even left, and I'm sure that's not a unique thing. But if we can quiet ourselves, and we will go to our Serenity Prayer, please. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. And also, we've been starting with a set-aside prayer. And for a lot of us, we know enough about AA and alcoholism to be dangerous to ourselves. And he really drives that point home tonight about prejudice. And that's no more than old ideas that are incorrect. He talks about being biased. And once again, that would be a old idea that's incorrect. And particularly, it's about the spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. But anyhow, a lot of us still have some of those things. We come with basic knowledge and ideas. So we ask God to open up our minds, our hearts, our souls to receive what he is going to give us this evening. And it goes as follows. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, my disease, these steps, and especially you, for an open mind, a new experience with myself, with my disease, these steps, and especially you. And last but not least, before we get started, we have taken something out of this book as our goal, our mission statement, our mantra, and it goes as follows. AA's 12 Steps, a group of principles, spiritual in nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink, enable the sufferer to be happily and usefully whole. That would be a recovered alcoholic, not recovering. That would be emotional sobriety, spiritual sobriety, real deal sobriety, and as I like to call it, by the book sobriety, and we find out that actually is what is called recovery. Now, we've got the niceties out of the way. I like to admit when I'm wrong, promptly, and I'm going to do that in front of the group right now, much to your surprise. Not explain it, admit I'm wrong. And I said, part of the deal in my morning meditation is I go to God, please help me remember, it's not my circus, therefore they're not my monkeys, talking about all of you. And I say, I am one of your monkeys, tell me what show, what ring, what platform to be on. And I come here today, and I'm here to tell you, I get the greatest things laid on this table before I come. And it is this. And as you can see, there's one, two, three, four, five, it looks like six monkeys. And it says, not my circus, not my and it says, oh crap, those are my monkeys, so I'm wrong. So that, is that beautiful or what? I tell you what. So anyhow, that is, I don't know, I think I might need one in the car, one at home, and one at work. So, I mean, I get the best things. Thank you for whoever got it. I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the stuff that comes up here. And that's the G-rated stuff right there. You wouldn't believe it. We ain't got time to go there with that. So anyhow, that was beautiful. All right. So where were we? Yes, we are. Tonight, we are in one of the best parts of the book. We are going to finish up tonight, for the most part, step two, where it says, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. We've gone at great length to that. Now, here's a real important idea, and it was for me. It says, to believe, not know. Okay, and it says, that a power, not in a power. But I'm going to trick you. You will find that you will end up knowing him, and it will be, you will find the power. So that's how it reads in the famous How It Works on page 59, where he lists the steps. We have some other ideas pivotal for this chapter. The word agnostic, the word atheist, the word belief, the word faith, the word spirituality, the word religion, the word conception and understanding. Very, very important ideas for this chapter. And you'll see some other stuff here, but we will get that later. And that is not a secret code, but it is. It's a life-changing code. You'll see here that we have one, two, three. And I'm not going to, I ran out of room, thank God for your eyes, because my writing's so bad. But you might want to do this. This is what this chapter is for. Three ideas. First one, open my mind. That's what the O stands for. This is to, oh, that's right, we did say that prayer, didn't we? To open my mind. D is to disregard old ideas. It'll blow your mind how we get rid of old ideas and replace with new ones, and it's life-changing. I mean, power beyond words, power beyond description. And then the third thing is G, this chapter, most importantly, is not here to prove to you that there is a God. God proves to you that there is a God. How cool is that? Okay. So that's the three things that this chapter is for. One more time. Open our minds, disregard old ideas, and God proves that there is a God to us. It does not, this chapter doesn't try to prove there is a God. It gives us new ideas so we can open our mind, cast aside old ideas, and then God proves to us there is a God once again. Now, I sound like a spouse here when I said need. It says need to, need to, need to. Anybody that's married will know what we're talking about there. We need to what? Read this. I would say everybody can agree to that. Okay, we need to study this, and I would say that would be fair, but most importantly, we need to do, y'all, come on. There's a chapter later on called Into Action. We don't wait till then because he tells us what if we do this, what will happen. And as a result, we get rid of old ideas, so old idea get cast aside and a new one. That's for you to decide how many old ideas you get rid of and how many new ones. I know how many it's for me, and it happens every time. Not some, not most, not a lot, not quite a few. Every time I go through this process of, well, we did it, read, study, and do. That's so simple that it is maybe too simple. So, once again, it came to believe, not know, in that a power, not in a power. News bulletin, if your sponsor hasn't told you, the only thing that can keep us from having a spiritual experience is you. You're the block if you're having a hard time with this. If you believe you can't, then you can't. If you believe you can, then guess what? You can. And it's real simple. If you believe, you receive, and if you doubt, you go without. Coming of Faith. This was written, actually, Grapevine article of 1962. Second half was a letter written in 1966. First thing it was written was 27 years sober. Second part of it, he was 31 years sober, and here's what he wrote, talking about Bill. It says, in my own case, the foundation stone of freedom from fear is that of faith. Uh-oh, it's up there, we're talking about it. A faith that despite all worldly appearances to the contrary, causes me to believe that I live in a universe that makes sense. We were talking about that earlier. To me, this means a belief in a creator who is all power, justice, and love. A God who intends for me a purpose, a meaning, and a destiny to grow, however little and haltingly, towards his own likeness and image. Before the coming of faith, I had lived as an alien in the cosmos that too often seemed both hostile and cruel. In it there could be no inner security for me. Big, big part of what we're going to do tonight, and that will fill in the blanks of what he said. He goes on to say, when I was driven to my knees by alcohol, I was made ready to ask for the gift of faith, and all was changed. Never again, my pains and problems notwithstanding, would I experience my former desolation. I saw the universe to be lighted by God's love. I was alone no more. Setting the table. Okay, as we will say quickly, I'll speak for myself on this one, especially fond of this chapter, obviously we agnostics. This is where Bill describes, discusses, and explains the spiritual experience in detail. This explanation is simple, straightforward, and sensible. Okay, when most people write about spirituality, they knock themselves out trying to prove God's existence, often alienate the reader in the process, and that's happened to me before. But Bill doesn't take that approach at all. Instead, he gives us a simple little procedure to follow that allows each of us to find a God, a conception. See, we're already starting to dance around on some of these words. A conception for ourselves. He doesn't get too complicated. Remember, Carl Jung told Roland Hazard, ideas, attitudes, emotions that once were the guiding force of the lives of these men are suddenly cast aside and a completely new set of conceptions begin to dominate them. Obviously, in part of that is the ideas about God. In this chapter, we find out alcoholism is described as a unique illness because with very few exceptions, a spiritual experience is the only thing that can overcome it. So now we are going to find out where we've been up to this point in time. Once you've accepted step one, you realize that anything that comes from your own resources, willpower, effort, fear, philosophy, morality, goals, good intentions, won't solve your powerless condition. Your human resources alone simply aren't sufficient. Step one now becomes the foundation of your recovery. We went great lengths to do that. We're going to find out tonight, step two, what part that is. And under the foundation, any builder here will know that you need a cornerstone. And lo and behold, that's what step two becomes. A lot of people, I believe, get in trouble with step two because they're confused with these two things here. Belief and faith. Don't get your undies in a bunch about that. We have a process that will take anybody from wherever you're at on this journey with this belief in the faith thing. Stay with me. So in other words, they want to have faith before you start. But you can't have faith before you start. You can only start with belief. And we'll go ahead and explain that to you. In other words, faith comes afterwards. First you believe, you make a decision on that belief, you take actions, then you get the results, and then you will get some faith or not. Depends on your results. Belief is the cause of your actions. Faith is the result. And also another thing too that I believe, now I'll speak for myself and a lot of us, so many of us are looking for God in all the wrong places. It's like that old movie, Looking for Mr. Goodbar. We're looking for God everywhere but where He really is and where, let me rephrase that. We're looking for God in so many places except where the own personal God is. In other words, this book tonight, the most of paragraphs of this book tells us exactly where God dwells and where we can find it. Like I said, this is a new conception of God, and with this new conception, they're able to move ahead. With an old idea, for most of us, there is no way in hell I could have made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care and direction of the God of my misunderstanding before I got into here. It wasn't going to happen. Just could not, would not, is not going to happen. And that's why this chapter is here. So anyhow, it's not so much in finding God. Somebody says, what? Well, God ain't lost, okay? So that's what I'm saying. You don't have to worry about finding Him. It's in the searching that you're rewarded, and then, yes, you may find Him or not. So, we talked about this last week. A lot of us, when we get to this point in time, we're in a hell of a mess, hell of a dilemma, because we find out it's either have this spiritual awakening, spiritual experience, or die. Most of us weren't real good with this God feller idea, her, whatever your deal was. Most of us had a lot of old ideas, and it wasn't too good, wasn't too pleasant. Vengeful God, you know, He's not going to have anything to do with me. All the misconceptions and all the things that block us from a spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. Most of us come to AA with a knowledge, maybe, of a little kid, 12 or 13 years old, and so on and so forth. We talked about that as far as seeing God on the crucifix, and I thought to myself, my God, if that was His favorite son, number one son, He was perfect. Look what they did to Him. That ain't going to happen to me, and I was done, and I was out the door. Bill knew when he wrote this that we need good information in order to make that decision next week. And here's where it is. Not because we're reformed alcoholics, because we are informed. There's a big, big difference. Okay. This chapter is one of the greatest pieces of spiritual information ever written, especially for us alcoholics. That is not my opinion. There are some of the spiritual giants in the world that agree with that. There was a Catholic priest, and his name, oddly enough, was Bill Wilson. He had 3 doctorates. He studied in Rome. Let me tell you, they got every book and then some in Rome when you're over there, and that's what you do. He said this was the greatest piece of spiritual information ever written. This chapter gives us 3 ideas. Number 1, new ideas. The old ones weren't any good. More importantly, that gives us a beginning point of finding this power. And number 3, gives us changed ideas of this God thing. He warns us 6 times about prejudice, 1 time bias, and 1, 2 times he tells us to be open-minded. Some of the definitions, real important because we're not going to stop once we get them. That's why we go from the beginning. First one is this word agnostic. Gnostic means knowledge. If you put ag in front of it, obviously, that's without knowledge. In other words, an agnostic is somebody who has no knowledge or without knowledge of God and or spiritual matters. Once again, the chapter's not here to prove there is a God. It's simply to open my mind so slightly that God might prove to me there's a God. Agnostic, one without knowledge, obviously. They believe there might be a God, but since He's never been proved to him, obviously, he doesn't pay attention to God. He may believe in God, but doesn't act like it, nor does he live like that. He runs the show, stands on his own 2 feet, rules his own destiny, just like the atheist. Basically, the agnostic does the same thing as the atheist. The difference is the atheist says there's no God, period. The agnostic says there is or probably a God. Atheist says, no God, whatever, amen. He has no power greater than himself, than human power, can't have a spiritual experience. He thinks he has to stand on his own 2 feet, run the whole show, his destiny, and he is the one all and be all. Atheist believes there's no God and acts like it lives accordingly. Unscientific definition of an agnostic and atheist, I found out for me, is an individual with an ego so big they can't stand superior competition. But okay, put that on your shelf, okay. And both the agnostic and the atheist get the same result. No help from a higher power or God. The difference is, one may believe or does believe, agnostic, and one doesn't believe. Obviously, the atheist doesn't believe at all. And so, obviously, I joke about it, the difference between an agnostic and an atheist, at least the atheist knows what he believes in or not. And the agnostic is a little bit more out of the loop, if you will. And I joke about this too. Atheism is a non-profit organization. So I'm sorry, that was too easy. Okay. Then we have a true believer. A lot of people say, oh no, I'm not agnostic, I'm not atheist, I'm a true believer. I said, oh really? Here's the definition of a true believer. One that believes there is a God and receives God's power in their life and knows God exists and lives accordingly. That's the key word. You can know it, you can have it, but if you ain't living it, then you ain't a true believer. Okay, so more definitions we talk about later on in the book. Intellect, that's no more than the capacity to learn. Put that on there, we'll get it. It talks about belief and faith. Belief and faith are two different things. Belief is upfront information or no more than suspicion. Faith implies knowledge, implies after-the-fact information. Certain things happen between belief and faith. Everything, not some, not most, not a lot, not quite a few, everything starts with belief or not knowing for sure. Success and failure, okay? Everything. Step two, like I said, we came to believe, came to believe, not to know, and obviously belief is the cause of your actions, faith is the result. I don't have to have faith. He tells me so. All I have to do is just believe, and that goes. We have some other ideas real quick, and he uses them, and we ain't going to be stopping when there. Spirituality and religion. So important that I know the difference. Religion says this is how you have to believe. Spirituality says it doesn't make a difference how you believe. Just believe. Religion is man's attempt to prove to God how good they are. Spirituality is God's attempt to prove to man how good He is. I get it. Religion is for people who don't want to go to hell. Spirituality is for people who have been to hell and don't want to go back. I'm in. Okay. Religion has rules, regulations, and rituals. Spirituality is free, flowing, and fantastic. Here's a hang-up that we've seen, or I know. Sometimes we're taught that man was made in God's image. That other big book, or the good book, talks about that. Unfortunately, we do it the reverse. We put man's image on God, all our warts, all our ugliness, all our faults, and we're saying God is the same way. Another trap, especially with you guys, I can't speak for you gals because I haven't done any fist step, but I've done a lot of fist steps with a lot of men. Here's a trap. We call God our heavenly Father, and if we've had problems with our earthly father, either consciously or subconsciously, you're putting that on Daddy, as I call him. You're putting it on your heavenly Father. Knowingly or not, I can't go to my heavenly Father until I'm okay with the father figure that I have here on earth. Took me a long time to get there, but I get it. I absolutely get it, either consciously or subconsciously. Most of us need to get rid of some of the old ideas that didn't work. Need to get some new ones. Some real simple definitions of spirituality, we talked about that. Out of self, into others, into God. Religion involves dogma, organized or institutionalized beliefs, more concerned with the do's and the don'ts. Spirituality is broad and inclusive. Spirituality represents the things that affect our lives, but which we can't see. What we're talking about things we can't see, touch, We're talking about love, hope, peace, serenity. That's what we're talking about, spirituality. Spirituality has no boundaries on it. There is no limit on it at all. Central in spirituality is mystery, not doctrine. That's a beautiful thing. The mystery of changed lives by following simple principles called the 12 steps. We talk about conception. We've never had a problem with our own conception of anything, but always had a problem with other people's conception, especially when it was forced upon us. And that's about anything, not just about God. And here's what is so freedom about that, and this is about discarding an old idea and getting a new one. Whatever I want God to be, so be it. My God, if you were in certain religion, you say that, they'll damn near burn you at the stake or excommunicate you or whatever they do, kick you out of church or, you know, make you wash dishes. I don't know, whatever you do on there. So anyhow, so whatever I want it to be, write it down. And guess what? It can change today. It can change from the beginning of here to when I get home, then I get up tomorrow, add to, subtract from, and guess what? As long as I'm okay with it, that's all that matters. Because guess what? If I'm okay with it, then and only then can I make a decision to turn my will, thinking, my life, my actions, over to the care and direction of that thing I'm okay with. Until I'm okay with it, it ain't going to happen. So, it goes on. Some of us were told we'd go to hell if we did that, but guess what? I haven't been to hell yet. So anyhow, talks about understanding God. Slippery slope here, and I'll speak for myself on this one. I don't understand what God does, why he does, or how he does, and quite frankly, it's none of my damn business, okay? All right, the old-timers, told me there were only two things I needed to know about God. Starting place, I said, okay, what was it? They said, first of all, there is a God. Then they said, you ain't it. We started having problems right there. And then they all told me, by the way, there's one other thing about God you need to know. I said, okay, let me have it. And they said, you got to pray to God. And I said, okay, why do I got to pray? All of them said, because he likes to hear from strangers. So go on, stay away from him. Okay, now, they also told me about this, about AA, and I agree. Said, I got some good news about AA, and I got bad news about AA. I said, oh, this should be good, so let me have it. I said, what's the bad news about AA? They said, it's all about God. I said, oh, no. All right, then give me the good news. They said, it's all about God. So in other words, I can know God, but I don't understand him. And here's how it is. St. Augustine, you might want to write this down and Google it if you don't know who he is. He said this, quote, since it is God we are speaking of, you do not understand it. If you could understand it, it would not be God. I get it. Okay. The first premise in theology that is God is beyond human understanding. So I don't have to understand God. All I have to do, I can know him but not understand him. With that idea, let's work on our conception of God rather than trying to understand him. And once again, I don't have to have faith, just belief. Let's see what the book says about this chapter here. And when we are in this chapter, we agnostics. When chapter 3, we were taught we need a spiritual experience to overcome our insanity, or the insanity will return, we will drink again. So chapter 4 is going to show us a power that we can live with. A simple way of finding that power helps us have a new understanding, new and different from the old misunderstanding. The reason being, all those are going to set us up for chapter 5, the famous how it works, but I can't get there until I have this. So he goes on to say, in the preceding chapters, we have learned something of alcoholism. Isn't that beautiful? He didn't say everything, something. I can go with that. Now, he goes on to say, we hope that we made it clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. You want to write this down real quick. He's going to do this. If, when you honestly, want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, which deals with a mental obsession, you ain't going to be able to, or when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, that's because of the allergy of the body, coupled with the mental obsession. In other words, he's given us the doctor's opinion, he's given us Bill's story, all the stuff before that to bring to these two things. And he says, if you have that, or when drinking, have little control or choice over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. Now, how much simpler is that? Two questions. If, then you're probably alcoholic. Now, I might be surprising some of you, but you know what we've done. We took those two questions, then we went to 10, then we went to 20, and then we went to 40. I happen to have one of those right here. Who, me? When you get a chance, if you want something funny, look at this, okay? That's what the book said, Alcoholics Anonymous. There's 40 questions, and by the way, there's a footnote that says, no, these questions are not AA questions, but are guide used by Johns Hopkins University Hospital. Really? A non-alcoholic is going to determine if I'm alcoholic or not. I'll tell you how stupid some of these questions are. Number two, do you prefer to drink alone? If that isn't the dumbest ass question I've ever heard, it's real simple. I drink alone when I'm buying, but when you're buying, hell no, I'm going to drink with you. I mean, that's stupid, okay? Number 22, it gets stupider. Has your sexual potency suffered since drinking? Well, if you're like most of us, you ain't had any of that in a lot of years either. Okay, now, 34, is drinking clouding your reputation? You ain't had any of that either. So, anyhow, if you want to laugh, look at these. So, here's where it gets even funnier. I know it's hard to believe. It says on the back, if you've answered yes to any one of these test questions, there is definite warning that you may be alcoholic. Oh, really? Okay. It says if you've answered yes to any of the two test questions, the chances are that you are an alcoholic. If you answered yes to three or more of the test questions, you are definitely alcoholic. There are no other questions in Alcoholics Anonymous, this book, this program, other than those two questions. Nothing more, nothing less, nothing else. We're losing people. We're killing them. Could you imagine if Abby would have gone to Bill and said, hey, Bill, is drinking ruining your reputation? Oh, my God. What the hell? He would have gotten the boot right out. Come on. Now, I'm going to go ahead and say it. Non-alcoholics asking questions to alcoholics if they're not. There was a guy named Wino Joe Leach down in Texas. I've heard his tape. He was dead before I got sober. He wrote his own questions. He was incensed that we would go to a university to ask ourselves if we're alcoholic. He wrote his own questions, and I'm going to just repeat three of them. His first question was, has the roof of your mouth ever been sunburned? If so, you're probably alcoholic. Come on, y'all. Another one I like, have you ever been arrested for drunk driving in the back seat of your car? Come on, y'all. Then the third one was, have you ever been arrested while in jail for public intox? You see what I'm saying? Now, in other words, alcoholics know the questions to ask. That's what that is. Joke about it, but at the same time, it's a matter of life and death. That's the only two questions. Nothing more, nothing less, nothing else. So he goes on to say, if that be the case, if you're alcoholic, remember how he starts this book. His first paragraph wraps up everything before that. In one paragraph, everything we've been doing since the beginning of January. It says, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Uh-oh. That means I have to know that appendix to spiritual experience. Got to know what it is, because if not, I can't go any further. We went to great lengths. And by the way, he will remind us one more time tonight on that to see appendix 2. Okay. So now he goes on for this chapter. The one who feels he's atheist or agnostic, such an experience, spiritual experience that is, seems impossible, but to continue on means disaster, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. So remember I said I'm a real alcoholic, page 21 of the hopeless variety. I'm not saying I'm different. I'm saying I'm in that book. So now I told you where the key is. That's it. Well, I've been saying all along, I'm a real alcoholic, page 21 of the hopeless variety out of this book. Thank God I know what's wrong with me, okay? Now he goes on to say, especially if he's an alcoholic of hopeless variety, to be doomed to an alcoholic death, step one, or to live life on a spiritual basis, step two, are not always easy alternatives to face. He is going to do this. One, two, one, two, one, two. Oh, I get it. That's why when we come back next week, when he says being convinced, we're at step three, because he's one, two-ing you to death. Step one, step two. Step one, step two. And you'd be amazed how many people would choose door number two. How bad is an alcoholic death? Well, let me see here. Yeah, let me sit there and debate that, right? Okay. So, it says not too easy alternatives to face. By the way, that's a fancy way of talking about that word dilemma. But he says it isn't so difficult. About half of our fellowship, not the program, were exactly of that type. What type? The atheist and agnostic. Now, don't forget, y'all, when he wrote that, remember, first 100, but we really know that it wasn't 100. It was 64, so half of that. Whatever it is, half of that, okay? It says, at first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope. We weren't true alcoholics. That's real alcoholic on page 21. But after a while, we had, not should, could, ought to, we had to face the fact that we must, not should, could, ought to, no guesswork, find a spiritual basis, not religious, come on, we talked all about the difference, of life or else. And by the way, that means you're going to drink and you're going to die. I get it. Either do this or die. I understand that kind of talking. Thank God there is no guesswork. None at all. So I'm saying with this chapter, we're not reformed, we are informed. So he goes on to say, perhaps it's going to be that way with you, but cheer up, something like half of us, he just did it again, thought we were atheists or agnostics. The key word to that sentence is thought. Our experience, that is history. It has happened. It's not a philosophy. It's not an idea. It's not what we're talking about. It's experience. It is what it is. Nothing more, nothing less, nothing else. That's what this book is. It's a book of experience. So he says, our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. That is obviously frustrated, embarrassed, upset, or confused. So don't worry about it if you think you are an atheist or agnostic. Took that right out. So now he's going to give me a formula to do. He goes on to say more about it. Remember, he doesn't say anything without giving you an example or explaining it. Here it is. He says, if a mere code of morals, a better philosophy of life, is sufficient to overcome alcoholism, you notice he didn't say drinking, alcoholism, okay, many of us would have recovered. Not drinking, we're talking recovery from alcoholism, difference between night and day, long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all of our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. This next paragraph and the first few sentences of the next paragraph is why we're all here, y'all. And it says, lack of power, that was our dilemma. Not is, was. Okay? Dilemma, remember? Die meaning to, lemma is an answer, neither mark too pleasant. A lot of dilemmas when you're drinking, a lot of dilemmas in this fellowship, and a lot of dilemmas in this book. And here's one of them. It says, we had, not should, could, ought to find a power by which we could live. Didn't say by not drinking. We're talking about living. Okay? And it had, not should, could, ought to be a power, squiggly writing, italicized, capital P, when referring to God, greater than ourselves. I love this next sentence. One word. Obviously. He cleaned that up. Okay? But where and how are we to find this power, capital P, God? I'm glad you asked that question. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Not sort of, not kind of, not generally, not in a roundabout way. Exactly. Thank God it's in black and white. Black words, white page, blue book. That's exactly what this book is about. Perfect, okay? And it says, its main object, not all of it, main object, is enable you to find a power, capital P, greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. The power solves the problem, you don't. You find the power, you search the power, and the power does the deal. Not me. That's why I said in the beginning, remember, because of God's grace and because of the aforementioned things, that's what he just got done saying. The power does it, not me. But this book gives me a formula to find the power. Okay, and then it says, which will solve your problem. That means we've written a book which we believe to be spiritual, not religious, as well as moral. And it means, of course, we're going to talk about God. Here difficulty rises with agnostic. Many times we talk to a new man and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems, plural, not drinking, we're talking problems, we're talking alcoholism, okay? And explain our fellowship, not the program. Remember, we went great lengths to talk about the difference, okay? But his face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, not religious, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened a subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or ignored. So he goes on to say, we know how he feels. We have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Here we go. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him which we have tried to, which someone had tried to impress us on childhood. Perhaps we reject that particular conception because it seemed inadequate. By the way, from this point on, for the most part, we are done talking about alcohol. For the most part. A little bit comes back in. From now on, we're talking about finding the power. If we're powerless, we find the power. It solves the problem, not me solving the problem. So now I know what the problem is. Lack of power. Didn't say alcohol was. Lack of power. So I'm powerless. Lack of power. That's the problem, not alcohol. Alcohol was a solution if you're alcoholic, if you're suffering from alcoholism. Now we know what it was. Remember, gangrene of the soul, hole in the soul, God whole. So lack of power, there's where it's at. So it goes on to say, with that rejection, we imagine we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We were bothered when with the thought that faith and dependence upon a power, capital P, beyond ourselves was somewhat weak, even cowardly. Faith and dependence. Uh-oh. That's a quantum leap there. I'm going to have faith, but if I'm not dependent on him, I'm still running the show. Guess what? I'm still screwed. Yeah, okay. It goes on like this. Now he gives us a lot of good reasons why we don't have an understanding of God. And it goes like this. We looked upon the world of warring individuals, warring theological systems. In other words, my God's better than yours, and he's going to beat your God up, and I'm going to blow you up doing it too. So how do you like that? So it's still going on today. Inexplicable calamity with deep skepticism. We looked askance. And that's to look sideways, suspicion, or disapproval. A lot of people looking askance at each other, okay? As many individuals claim to be godly, how could a supreme being, capital S-N-B, which is God, have anything to do with it all? And who could comprehend a supreme being anyhow? Yet in other moments we found ourselves thinking, when enchanted by a starlit night, who then made all this? There was a feeling of awe and wonder, but it was fleeting and soon lost. Yes! We of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. Here we go. Here's a big part. Getting ready to get rid of an old idea, a new one coming in. Listen, it says, we found soon that we're able to lay aside prejudice, old ideas, and express even a willingness to believe in a power, capital P God, greater than ourselves. We commence to get results. All I have to do is believe, and I get results. How cool is that? That's all. Nothing more, nothing less, nothing else. Okay? Now, here's where a lot of people really get their undies in a bunch, and we got some spoons to get them out. But here's what it is. Here's what it is. Don't shoot the messenger. It's the message in the book about the power. Okay? And it says this. Okay? We commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God. Period. I didn't say it, the book did. Spoons will be out to the right on the table. Come on, y'all. I mean, that's power. There's no guesswork. So I don't have a higher power. Well, I do. I'm married to her, but my boss. My boss, tax day's coming up. The man, you know, the police, the IRS. I got lots of higher powers. And I got to listen to them. But I have the highest power. You just got done telling me. Lack of power was my dilemma. There is one who has all power. That one is God, and he just got done saying it. Nothing more, nothing less, nothing else. That's what this book called Alcoholics Anonymous says. Just reading the book. Okay, now it goes on to say, much to our relief, we discovered we need not consider anyone else's conception. We talked about that of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. Didn't say to find him, make the approach. So now he's telling us to make, have a belief, okay, then have a conception, then we can make an approach. See how he's going? Old ideas cast aside, and new ones coming along. Okay, and it says, to make the approach and to effect contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of creative intelligence, capital C, capital I, a spirit of the universe, capital S, capital U, underlying the totality of things, listen what happens. We began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction. Wow. Ain't done nothing but being willing to believe, willing to get an open mind, and look at the promises that we got. Remember in this book, there ain't 12 promises, there's 152 of them. He just got done giving us about four of them right there. All right, now listen to what it says, okay? Provided we took other steps. So in other words, I come to believe in step two. I make a decision in step three to go after this power by turning my will and my life over the care and direction of God as I understand him. I take action on that decision, steps 4 through 11, and then, yes, I get the results in step 12, the spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. See the process of this thing called recovery from alcoholism. Okay, so it goes on to say, and I love this too, we found God does not make too hard a term for those who seek him. Didn't say find him, seek. That was an old idea, because I thought I had to have God in my pocket. That was an old idea cast aside, a new one come in. Like I said, you tell me how many ideas you got. And goes on to say, to us, the realm of the Spirit, capital R and S, is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding. Well, that's a new idea, too, because I thought you had to cross your T's and dot your I's, or else he wasn't going to have nothing to do with you other than kick you down to the curb and everything else. See what I'm saying? Now he's saying, no, 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 no. All-inclusive, even for us sinners. Yeah. Any sinners in here? Yeah, okay. So anyhow, and by the way, that's not a religious term. We talked about that real quick. That is Greek and Roman. It's an archery term, which means off the mark. Miss the target. I get it. Sometimes my arrows don't even get to the target, much less missing it. Come on, y'all. That's how bad it is. So anyhow, it says, never exclusive or forbidding those who earnestly, qualifying the seeker now, seeking him, it is open, we believe, to all men. A lot of new ideas and a lot of old ones cast aside in that. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. He goes on, when therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God. This applies too to other spiritual expressions, not religious, which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice, remember the old ideas, you may have against spiritual terms, not religious, deter you from honestly asking yourself, what do they mean to you? At the start, this was all we needed to commence spiritual growth, to affect our first conscious relation with God as we understood him. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things which seemed entirely out of reach. That was growth, but if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere, so we began to use our own conception, however limited it was. Now, I have taken the liberty to take some of the terms that are in our textbook that describe God. And I'm going to read them, and if you get a chance, if you dare, in your morning meditation, take the time sometime and get one of these things. These all come out of the big book. And if you would take the time and choose one of them and meditate, better buckle up, buttercup, because I tell you what, you are going to be moved. And here's what the book says, and this has been my experience. And I agree with every one of these, and there's a whole lot more. Remember my own conception that I've added to you, and I ain't going to tell you what it is because it's none of your business. It's me and God's business, but I agree with all these. So here's out of the book. God, power greater than self, supreme being, creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, realm of the spirit, him, he, all-powerful, guiding, presence, infinite power and love, creator, maker, universal mind, spirit of nature, czar of the heavens, father of light, great reality, one who has all power, director, principal, father, employer, spirit, infinite, everything, all knowledge, friend, one higher power. There's one on here for everybody, and then whatever you can get. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And like I've been saying, and I won't say that again. Whenever he talks about God, other than using the word God, he capitalizes the letters on there, meaning God. It's just a beautiful thing right here. So, what's great about it is no two belief systems, if we're doing it as the book tells us, are going to be the same. My conception is going to be different than hers, than his, than yours, and all that. We're going to be different, and that's good. So, here are some life-changing questions, and answer these from your heart, not your head. We need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, talking about the agnostic, or am I willing to believe, the atheist, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man says that he does believe, the agnostic, or is willing to believe, the atheist, we emphatically assure him that he's on his way. On his way to what? On his way to that spiritual awakening, spiritual experience. Beautiful, remember? We have to have it. Okay. Now, it goes on to say, it has been repeatedly proven among us that upon the simple cornerstone, step two, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built, spiritual experience. And it says that asterisk. Remember, please. Now he's begging you, just short of begging you. Please be sure to read Appendix 2 on spiritual experience. I must understand that. Okay. Now he goes on to say this, okay? This was great news to us, for some of us assumed we could not make use of spiritual principles unless we accepted many things on faith which seemed difficult to believe. Here's where is the difference between faith and belief. Remember I said everything starts with belief. Give me a real simple illustration. If I moved to a different area and I needed a doctor, a dentist, an automobile technician, I would go to you guys and say, my car isn't working. Somebody would say, well, you take it to Charlie's garage. Charlie will do the work right the first time. He will do it quickly, he will do it fairly, and he will give you a good price. On my belief, I will take my car to Charlie. Indeed, he fixes the car, I pick it up, the price is right, it's done fair, it's done whatever, and so on and so forth. That belief caused me to act to take the car to Charlie. I got the results. Next time the car is broken, I don't ask you or anybody else, where do I go? I go back to Charlie. Not on belief, on faith, because I went through the simple process. I was willing, I believed, I decided, I acted, and I got results. It's the same thing. Real simple. I believed the first time I came in this room that if I hit that light switch, lights would go on. On belief, I did that. And lo and behold, the lights went on. When I came back the second time in this room, I did it on faith. I didn't do it on belief because I was willing to believe that it would work. I decided it would work. I flipped the switch, and indeed, it worked. That belief turned into faith. It's the same thing with God and all things in life. So it's real simple. Everything that you buy, that's why they have advertising, whatever. If you've never had that product before, you believe it. You take action and you get results. Guess what? We did the same thing with alcohol. I didn't know it was going to work for me. Somebody told me it would. I believed it. I took action on it, and baby, I got the results. And I was, next time I drank, it wasn't on belief, it was on faith, because I knew what it did. So, real quick, I love when you guys say that, don't you? Yeah, okay. Going to give you the key to life. It's on the board. The first one is real simple. Every alcoholic knows how to do this. Any alcoholic don't know how to barf? Okay, yeah, all right. No, not that kind in the toilet. It's real simple. You believe in whatever it is. On that belief, you take action, you act. You're going to get results. Either it's going to be positive or negative. And then that turns into faith. I cannot start with faith first. I have to believe. I have to decide. I have to act. I get results. Now, this is the most important part of this whole thing. HTC. I'm going to tell you how it is. How to change. There's six things. First, you have to be willing to believe you can change. I'm not going to write that down. First, I have to be willing to believe that I can change. How do you become willing? Well, in this case, by drinking enough whiskey and having enough pain and misery. That's what makes you willing. Then after I be willing to change, I have to believe I can. Oh, I get it. Step one is the willingness. Step two is believing I can. Then I have to make a decision to do so. Oh, that's step three. Then I have to take action. Oh, that's steps 4 through 11. I get results. And then step 12, I get faith. I no longer believe that God will restore me to sanity. I know He will because He has. One more time. How to change anything in life. First, you have to be willing. Number two, believe you can do so. This is the change. Number three, make a decision to do so. Number four, take action on that decision. Number five, you will get results. And then number six, you're going to have faith. The same 12-step process. Real simple. Like I said, be willing to change, tore up from the floor up, beat up from the feet up, can't take any more, sick and tired, being sick and tired, just can't do it anymore. Believing we can do so, obviously, in step two, making the decision, step three, taking the action, 4 through 9, 10, 11, 12, you get the results. Most importantly now, with this, I don't have to worry about who God is and He isn't. I don't have to understand Him. I don't have to sit in the dark anymore. I don't understand electricity. Never will. I don't care. There's one guy in here where he's sitting in the back row. But I'm not going to sit in the dark until I do because I'll be sitting there. I don't understand how a computer works, but guess what? Use the thing every day. I don't understand a lot of things, but I'm not going to sit in the dark until I do. All I have to do is that simple formula. So, the only thing I have to worry about is there power greater than myself? If there is, which I know there is, that I need to make that decision and take action, which we start next week. Then sooner or later, I'm going to find out, but I can't find out until I take the action. It's absolutely impossible. And like I said, obviously, if you don't know, if you know you need the power, which we need to, and from that starting point to find the power is believing, and we know the formula to find the power, there's only one thing left for us is where is that power, and he finishes up in that book or in this chapter. So now we're done with the belief and faith. Okay, so he goes on to say, and this is it. Okay, when people present us with spiritual approaches, not religious, how frequently do you say, I wish I had what this man has. I'm sure it would work if I could only believe as he believes, but I cannot accept surely true the many articles of faith which are so plain to him. So it was comforting to learn that we could commence at a simpler level. Belief. Go through that formula. Besides the seeming inability to accept much on faith, we are often found ourselves by handicap or obstinacy, which is unreasonable, stubborn, wanting things our way. Never. Okay. We often found ourselves obstinacy, sensitive, and unreasoning prejudice again. Again and again, old ideas, they got to go. Many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things, not religious, made us bristle, and that's ready to fight back or hostile, or to fight back, made us bristle with antagonism, that's hostile. This sort of thinking had, not should, could, ought to be abandoned. Once again, old ideas replaced with new ones. Okay.